Now, one of the most important aspects of what Martin did in his time as finance minister was called labor flexibility. You know, you can, that one can just sort of drift by you, right? Oh yeah, it doesn't sound that bad. Labor flexibility. What it is, of course, is that you completely take away all the power and rights that labor managed to fight for and get over 40 years. Labor flexibility is beat the hell out of workers until they never ask for a wage increase again. It worked very well. First of all, you cut UI so that only a third of people who pay into it ever get it. You get rid of the Canada Assistance Plan so psychopaths like Gordon Campbell can cut the welfare system. And then you have a thing called the NIRU. How many people have heard of this? This, in fact, is the economic policy that ran Canada for most of the 90s. It's called the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. Now, I have to ask you also to think back when was the last time you heard anyone use the phrase full employment. Some of you are too young to have heard this. No one talks about this anymore. But this is what governments used to talk about. They used to talk about full employment. Now a government would say, or a politician would say, we're not going to allow unemployment to go above 4%. Now, in the 90s, they say we're not going to allow unemployment to go below 9%. Why? The non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. You have to keep unemployment high enough so that inflation won't rise. Now, it's a complete nonsense. You can't find an economist on the planet who can actually justify this. But one thing it does do is it keeps workers in their place. 9% unemployment, you want to keep your job. So, I mean, right across the country now, you see, 25% of Canadians now work 50 hours or more a week. Tens of thousands of Canadians work overtime for no pay. Not only not time and a half, no pay. Employers go to their employees and say, if you want to prove to me that you want this job, you have to work overtime for 10 hours for nothing. Working conditions are so bad that a Health Canada study showed that the level of stress, the number of people now saying that they are under severe stress in their work is 55%. In 1989, it was 37%. So it's almost doubled under free trade, the severe stress. The result of that is not only an enormous amount of illness in the workplace, but people have quit having family, postponing them or quit having them because the economic security is so severe, they don't want to bring kids into this world. So that's Paul Martin. Not a nice man, as my niece said, bad man. Got it right. So Paul Martin dealt with the deficit crisis, right? I mean, that's another whole topic that I won't talk about. He didn't really get rid of the deficit. What got rid of the deficit was economic growth. But after announcing this incredible, terrible fight we had to have with the deficit, 2 years later he had a surplus. So that was Paul Martin's real crisis. If you're a guy who doesn't want to spend, if you're a guy who wants to downsize democracy and remove the federal government from nation building, having a surplus is the last bloody thing you want. You know, this is a So Paul Martin had a surplus crisis. And the way he dealt with it was he just kept underestimating it, right? And the CCPA, Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, got on to him on this and started to estimate the surpluses at the same time that Paul Martin was estimating them. So from 1999, I'll just give you one example. In 1999, the official surplus estimate was $3 billion. The AFB estimate, the alternative federal budget of the CCPA, was $16 billion, and the actual was $12.7 billion. But if you add up the four years starting with 1999, the actual surplus was $46.7 billion. The CCPA's estimate was $46.7 billion, exactly on the money. The official target, $10.5 billion. So what happens with those surpluses at the end of the year? They go onto the debt automatically because the year's by already, so you can't spend it. So that's what Paul Martin did. He kept hiding the surpluses. But by the year 2000, even the Globe and Mail was saying, come on, Paul, you gotta, fess up, you got a surplus, Be brave, talk about it. So he was facing $193 billion surplus, which not only could have put all the money back into healthcare, education, and welfare, but we could have had a national child care program and a national farmer care program. There was an extra $40 billion a year over 5 years that he could have spent. So he gave a $100 billion tax cut. 77% of the personal tax cut went to the wealthiest 8% of Canadians. I call this class war reparations, right? This is, the rich have long memories, right? They never forget a dime that we've taken from them. So they don't just want their fair share from now on. They want the money we got from them in fair wages back. That's what they're doing. And Paul's just only too happy to accommodate. Now we have debt reduction. Suddenly there's a debt reduction crisis, right? We now have the best debt to GDP ratio, which is how we measure these things, because it tells you the capacity of a country to pay it off. So we have the best debt to GDP ratio in the G7. But he wants to bring it from 40% down to 25%. See, this is the poison pill. Anytime you hear Paul Martin say, we might do something good if we have the money, think about this, because he's going to drive the debt down to 25% of GDP, which means every dime of a surplus from now, the next 4 years, is going to go onto the debt, and we won't see any of it in social spending. So that's how Paul Martin has essentially restructured Canada, the nation, into Canada, the economy, and deep integration really is simply the formalization of the contract. I remember this wonderful cartoon by Aislinn, the cartoonist for the Montreal Gazette, when we were fighting the free trade deal. We used these. He had about a dozen cartoons that we used. It was just, he didn't even have to talk to people. He just handed them a cartoon. But this one was Uncle Sam with the big hat and the flag and walking alongside the beaver, who was Canada, you know, talking about free trade. And the beaver says, okay, Sam, we'll give you everything, but that's our final offer. And Sam says, let me think about it. See, Sam wasn't convinced that we knew what everything was. He wanted to be damn sure that he got to define everything. So, Paul Martin's cabinet is frighteningly right-wing and pro-American. He has a cabinet committee on Canada-US relations, and it's like having, you know, seven Stephen Harpers, you know, sitting on a committee. People who, I think, fundamentally hate their own country and want to integrate Canada into the United States as fast as they possibly can. Some of these people are quite scary. John Mackay, the legislative assistant to Martin, and also the legislative assistant on public-private partnerships, which is just privatization, only worse. Everything's going to be P3s from now on, that's what he said. He says, why should the public own a hospital? This was a question he posed in an interview with the National Post. Good question, John. Anyway, I'm competing with Maud for the Voice of Doom Award, but we actually... The reason I'm so happy is Canadians' values are amazingly progressive. And in fact, if you look at the really in-depth studies of Canadians and what they think about and how they feel about their community and how they feel about their country vis-a-vis the United States, and how they feel about democracy, their values are actually getting more progressive as the years go by. Certainly over the last 5 or 6 years, they tell the pollsters they want their governments back. So all of us in this room who are activists who want to make the world a better place, we know that we have the raw material in Canadians who care about the same things we do. Thank you.
Murray Dobbins.